As I was preparing this afternoon, I was thinking about this verse in Matthew's Gospel in chapter 32, 24, verse 32. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. And I was chuckling to myself, really, looking outside. I'm thinking, it's supposed to be spring, isn't it? And I was thinking, well, you know, it's all a bit mistimed, isn't it? You know, it's supposed to be spring, and we've got snow, and the clocks are changing next week, and they're supposed to be changing in spring. And you look outside, and it's all kind of upside down, really. It all seems a bit wrong. I was really thinking about this passage, really, of Jesus returning. And I was thinking also that in 2 weeks, we're going to be celebrating Easter. And what's really striking about celebrating Easter is we celebrate it every year, don't we? We celebrate it every year, but actually, Easter is something that has already happened. We're on this side of Easter. It's not something that we're going to celebrate in 2 weeks as if it's going to happen. It's already happened. And because it's already happened, well, there are consequences. There are privileges, there are joys, and there are consequences. And sometimes in the Christian life, we can turn it on its head, a bit like it's meant to be spring, but it really doesn't look like it. And sometimes we can forget that Easter has already happened, that Jesus has already died, that Jesus has already risen, that Jesus has already ascended into heaven, that Jesus is interceding for us already. And all we're waiting for is Jesus to return. That's the right side of Easter. We're not looking forward to Easter in the sense of in 2 weeks' time, we're looking at his death and resurrection as if let's look at it again. We're looking at it knowing that it's already happened, and all we're doing is waiting for Jesus to return. I wonder if you've ever kind of pondered that for a moment, that we sometimes celebrate things every year. We celebrate Christmas. And, you know, it just comes and goes, doesn't it? I mean, you prepare 3 weeks for it, and it's come, and then it's gone. And it's a bit like Easter. The Easter eggs have been in the shops now for at least 2 months. I can tell you that because I bought you Easter eggs a couple of months ago when you came to Fellowship Group. They've been there. They've been sitting there for months. But it'll just come and go. These big events that we're celebrating just come and go. But do you know what? It's not this thing that we have to kind of keep reminding ourselves of. There's only one thing that's going to happen soon, and it's that Jesus is going to return. And verse 36 says, "But of that day and hour, no one knows. Not even the angels of heaven, but only my Father knows." It's incredible when you think about it. We're not looking forward to Good Friday or Palm Sunday or Easter Sunday, thinking about what Jesus is going to do on a cross. We look back at that. We're meant to look back at that. We're meant to remember it. What we're looking forward to today is that one truth. Jesus Christ is coming, and he is coming soon. And no one knows. The angels in heaven, not us, only the Father. Let's ponder that this evening. Let's ponder that one thing, that Jesus Christ is returning. Ponder that one thing as you prepare for Good Friday and Easter. That's happened in the past, and we're waiting for Jesus to return. Just ponder that one thing this evening. Ponder the significance of that one thing in your own life. Just ponder that for just one evening. What does it mean for me to know that Jesus is going to return? It spells it out in Matthew's Gospel for us about all the things that we're meant to ponder as we think about this one truth. Jesus is going to return. And Matthew, as he writes, he tries to illustrate it by talking about the days of Noah. Verse 37, But as the days of Noah, if you want to remember this one thing, if you want to ponder this one thing, just think about the days of Noah. In the days of Noah, they were eating and drinking, marrying, giving in marriage, until Noah entered the ark, and did not know until the flood came and took them all away. So also will the coming of the Son of Man be. Do you want to know what Jesus is going to come like? It's going to be like in the days of Noah, when everyone was happy and doing what they wanted, and everyone was working or marrying or drinking or doing whatever they wanted. And then suddenly, the flood came. And all those in the ark were saved. And all those outside the ark perished. It was sudden. It was as if they weren't prepared for it, because they were far too busy doing this and this and this and this. It's a bit like when the snow came just last week or the week before. People trying to prepare themselves, weren't they? You know, we heard stories of what happened in other parts of the country, not here, because there wasn't any snow. But what happens in other parts of the country? People went into the shops and emptied the shelves. They were preparing for it, weren't they? The bread had gone, the milk had gone, the eggs had gone, it all gone. If it was our house, all the chocolate would have been gone. People were preparing for it. But not in the days of Noah. They were just eating and drinking, and suddenly the flood came and they were gone. You see, Matthew wants us to just remember this one thing. Remember what it's going to be like when Jesus returns. It's going to be sudden. And there are implications for all of us. There are implications for Christians. For Christians, we're meant to realize that Jesus is going to come back. But we don't know when he is going to come back. We're not meant to, as Christians, try to work out the timing of when Jesus comes back. As if, well, let's have a look at chapter 24. Let's have a look at all these signs and indicators and see if we can work out exactly when Jesus is going to come back. No, that's not what we're meant to do. We're not meant to have seminars or discussions or arguments and thinking, well, or write books. So when is Jesus Christ going to return? Because, frankly, that's a waste of time. Because we don't know. Only the Father does. We're not to waste our time thinking, well, let me try and tell people how they can be prepared by working out the exact date. Because nobody knows. Only the Father. It's got implications for Christians. We're not meant to waste our time thinking about it. We're just meant to know that Jesus Christ is coming. And we're to prepare for it. But the day and the hour? Don't worry about that. We don't know. It has implications for unbelievers. Verse 40, two men will be in the field. One will be taken, the other one left. Two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken and the other left. Watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. It has implications not just for Christians, it has implications for everyone. That when Jesus comes, it's going to be a rude interruption. If you have been interrupted when you're concentrating, if you have been interrupted when you're concentrating, I was going to try and describe the sound that one of my sons makes when I'm trying to concentrate and then they try and interrupt me. One of them asks very gently and the other one screams. That's his only way of kind of getting my attention. He screams, "Daddy!" at the top of his voice. "Daddy!" at the top of his voice. And if you have been interrupted, When you're really trying to concentrate on something, when you're really trying to put your mind to something and somebody's interrupting you and it just makes you really irritable, doesn't it? Because you're really trying to concentrate on this one thing and then somebody's constantly trying, and you can't give them your attention, can you? And sometimes you can get so interrupted that what you're trying to do kind of gets spoilt, or you miss something, or you forget something. But listen, when Jesus returns, it's going to be a great interruption. People are going to be busy trying to do this and that, and he's going to come, and it's going to be interrupted. And it's not just going to be interrupted kind of to spoil something. It's going to be a permanent interruption. I can tell Zephon, who screamed at the top of his voice, "Daddy! Be quiet. Be quiet." I can tell him. He doesn't listen, but I can tell him. We can't turn around and say to Jesus, when he comes, "Stop interrupting me." We can't turn around to Jesus and say, "Can you please come back another time?" We can't turn around to Jesus and say, "Well, I'm just really busy sorting this one thing out. Can you just give me 5 minutes? When he comes, it'll be sudden. There'll be great interruption. Two will be in the field, one will be taken. Two will be grinding, one will be taken. Christians, we're not meant to try and identify the time. Unbelievers, we're meant to see this and to see that, look, whatever we think is important, we're not going to be able to finish it. At the same time, there's going to be separation. Two men, two women, together in the field. One will be gone. I found my wife crying in tears the other day. Tears, crying, trying to work out what she was doing. She was watching a film. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called Lion. Anyone seen it? Lion. It's about a little Indian boy who jumps on a train with his brother, and he gets separated from his brother, and the train goes thousands and thousands, well, not thousands of miles, but hundreds and hundreds of miles up north of India, and he's separated from his mother. And it's only when he's adopted and he's ended up in... I haven't watched the film, I'm just paraphrasing now. I haven't got the patience to watch it. But he ends up in Australia, adopted mother. And then years and years later, he's trying to find out where he's from. He's trying to find his mother, and he does all this research. And he eventually, towards the end of the film, finds his mother. And he travels all the way back to India. It's based on a true story. And you can see the look on the mother's face of the separation. And the tears of joy when that separation is finally no longer separation, but together. You see, it's a film and you can cry over it and you can have the tears. But this is a sobering separation, isn't it? To be thinking that when Jesus returns, there's going to be a great separation. There's going to be a separation between the sheep and the goats. There's going to be a separation between those who have believed and those who haven't. And it will be forever. It will be forever. We are meant to read this. And we're meant to be alert. We're meant to be prepared. And as we read it, it keeps reminding us, watch therefore, verse 42. You do not know when your Lord is coming. Verse 43, but know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and would not allowed his house to be broken into. You've got this illustration of the thief. It happens a few times in the Bible. It's there in Thessalonians, it's there in 2 Peter, it's there in Revelation. You know, if you'd known a thief was going to come into your house, Jesus is going to come like a thief. We don't prepare for thieves, do we? But we're meant to be prepared at all times. Listen to Revelation 3, verse 3, as it talks about this illustration of the thief. Therefore, remember what you've received and heard, and obey it and repent. If you do not wake up, I will come like a thief, and you will never know what hour I will come against you. You know, I always wondered why the Bible uses this illustration of a thief. You know, thieves, it's not like it's a positive illustration, is it? To describe Jesus like a thief in the night. But you see, it's positive in the sense of when a thief comes, the thief is against you. That's what Revelation reminds us of. When that thief comes, the thief is against you, opposed to you. And we're meant to remind ourselves that when Jesus returns, when he comes like a thief in the night, he's against those who've rebelled against him. He's against those who've opposed him. I need to try and sum up this portion of the passage for us. This portion of the passage is really encouraging. You might not think that, but it really is. And shall I tell you why it's really encouraging? Because Jesus has not yet come. Jesus has not yet come. Jesus is not yet against those who aren't following him. He's not yet come. When I became a Christian in the year 2003, he hadn't yet come. Isn't that encouraging? When you became a Christian, he hadn't yet come. Today, he has not yet come. As we looked at a photo, if you were here before the start of the service, you would have seen a photo. You would have seen a photo of Food for Thought. You would have seen there were many people there. The room was full. You might have brought a friend or a family member along with you. You might have invited somebody along with you. Well, Jesus has not yet come. We should be encouraged by that. We should be glad that he's not yet come. Listen to Lamentations 3. Through the Lord's mercies, we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. Every day we wake up, the Lord's mercies are new. Isn't that wonderful when you think about that? Every single day is a day of God's mercy. Every single person you know that hasn't yet prepared themselves for the return of Jesus as King, God is merciful. God is kind. And God is compassionate. Isn't that really encouraging when we think about that? And today, he is still at the right hand of his Father, interceding for us. He is still there hearing our prayers. We can still pray to him and ask him for mercy on our family and our friends. We can still pray to him and ask him for help. We can still pray to him and ask that he would come in power to those who are outside his kingdom. There are many people today who are against Jesus. And yet today, God is willing to still forgive them. It's really encouraging, isn't it? But at the same time, I ask this question of Easter. It's 2 weeks away. What's the point of Easter? What's the point of it? Easter eggs. Don't get me wrong, I love Easter eggs. We like chocolate in our house. But what's the point of Easter? What's the point of putting on a service of Good Friday? What's the point of putting on an Easter Sunday morning service with a lunch? What's the point of it? Listen, there is one point of it. It's for Christians to rejoice, isn't it? To look back at what Jesus has done. But you know, there's no command anywhere in the Bible to celebrate Easter. There's no command to celebrate Christmas. There's no command in the Bible to celebrate Easter and Good Friday. There's no command to have services on those days. Why do we do those services? Well, we put those services on so that it's a great opportunity for others. Not just us, but others to come and to hear of God's goodness and of God's sacrifice and of the cross and of the resurrection. It's a wonderful opportunity, isn't it? To think about those that we can pray for, to think about those that we can invite. What's the point of Easter? To give somebody an Easter egg? Or to give them the gospel message and to remind them of everything that Jesus Christ has done. So what's the point of all of these truths to remind ourselves of Jesus coming? Well, it challenges then in verse 45, who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his master made ruler over his household to give them food in due season? The point of all this is, you know, not just we know about Jesus coming, but what's the purpose in knowing that Jesus is going to come? What's the purpose in us as Christians knowing that he's going to come soon? What's the purpose in verse 44 of saying, be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect? What's the point of all that? You see, it's a challenge to us. God's telling us all this, not that we try and work out when he's coming. I've already said that. God's telling us not that just we believe it and we know, well, okay, fine, I'll believe that only God knows when Jesus is coming back. The purpose is not just to be joyful. We're meant to be joyful. What's the purpose in all this? Verse 45 to 51. Well, we're meant to keep watch. We're meant to keep watch. We're meant to be ready. We're meant to be serving. We're meant to be faithful. We're meant to be wise. We're meant to make most of every day and its opportunities that it brings. We're meant to be a wise and faithful servant. We're meant to be serving him in whatever way he calls us to serve him. And we're meant to be careful that we're not presuming or assuming that he's not coming. We're meant to be careful that we're one of the faithful servants, not the evil servant. You see there in verse 48, but if that evil servant says in his heart, my master is delaying his coming, and begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he's not looking for him and at an hour he's not aware of, and he will cut him in two and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. We're meant to be careful and we're meant to challenge ourselves and to ask ourselves, what kind of a servant am I? Am I the kind of servant that is faithful and wise and serving the Lord? Or am I somebody who looks like he's my master? When the parable shows at the end that they're really not. You see, sometimes we can get into the habit of this. We can think, well, who's the gospel for? Who's the gospel for? And we can sometimes get in the habit of thinking, well, the gospel is for people who aren't Christians. And we're right. We're right. But sometimes what we do is we forget that those closest to us, those who are here in church buildings, those who look like they're servants, sometimes they're not. And the gospel, my friends, is for everyone. And as much as we try and share the gospel with those who are outside the kingdom, let's make sure our those who are close to us, those who we call our brothers and sisters, they really are serving the Lord, waiting and watching. Let's make sure that we're talking with one another. It's been really encouraging in the last few weeks as Sally has been doing this notice sheet. It's been really encouraging that people have been asking me and talking to me and about ministries that are going on in this church. It's been really encouraging that people have been asking me, so I hear we're doing this, so it'd be really great to pray for it. It's been really encouraging for me, and I'm sure maybe it's encouraging for you, that people are asking you questions about things that are going on in this church. It's really encouraging when we talk about the way we serve, rather than just asking each other, how are you? How are you? Let's not just ask each other, how are we? Let's make sure that we're preparing one another for the return of the King. It's been one of those funny days, and I got up this morning, I had a message off Mark. Oh, I'm not feeling great. 5 minutes later, I had a message off Nigel. Not feeling great. One of those afternoons, you know? Message off Mark, would you mind preaching? And it's just one of those funny days, and you look at it, you know, a cough and a cold, a bit of snow, not very much. And some of us probably looked at the snow and thought, I don't know if I can drive to work. I don't know if I can drive to church. And some of us would have got a bit anxious. And in one sense, they're not really big things, are they? They're really little things, aren't they? Coughs and colds and viruses. little bit of snow. It's not really that much snow at all. It's gone. But you know, sometimes our lives are like that, aren't they? They're full of really small things, aren't they, that bother us. It's amazing how much a cold can take somebody like me out of action. Really, really small things. But you know, when you think about those small things just affecting even just us today, and you multiply them out, and you multiply them into the problems of Clydach, and you multiply them out into the problems of Wales and the UK, into the world. Just think about not just the little problems, all the big problems. It's incredible when you think about all the problems in the world. And yet when you look at the cross, when we're reminded of the glory of the cross in a couple of weeks, we're reminded that Jesus Christ came to this world to deal with sin and death and pain and suffering and destruction. We're reminded that today, when we stand on this side of the cross, that when he returns, he's going to make everything right. You and I can get bothered by small things, but I'm sure you'll say we get bothered by really big things. And you think for a moment, just think for a moment, just ponder for a moment this evening. What is it going to be like for you when Jesus Christ returns? What is it going to be like for you when Jesus Christ returns? What is it actually going to be like for you? What are you going to gain when Jesus Christ returns? What are you looking forward to when Jesus Christ returns? What are you hoping for when Jesus Christ returns? What excites you about Jesus Christ returning? My friends, let's be encouraged today. Let's be encouraged that he's coming, but he hasn't yet come. That today is a day of his mercy. Let's use every single day as a day of his grace and his mercy and of an opportunity. And let's be watchful. Let's be waiting. Don't just give an Easter egg out this Easter, as if that's going to make somebody happy. Give them something far better. Give them an Easter egg and give them then the gospel. Invite them along to Bethel on Good Friday and Easter Sunday. Invite them to come and hear of the good news of Christ, that he came to die so that he could fix all that is wrong. And then when he comes, that he's going to make everything new. Everything new. And we, if you're his people, will be able to live with him. If I could say like this, there's going to be no more coughs and colds and sneezes. But we will have this glorious resurrected body. And we will be with him and we'll be like him. And we'll see him. And be with him forever and forever and forever. My friends, are you excited? Are you excited about that day? Are you secure? Are you secure in Jesus Christ today? And will you? Because you already know, will you, because you already know that he is coming at an hour that nobody knows, will you go and prepare others? You see, all the people around us are living like they were in the days of Noah. They don't know. They're not aware. But if you're a Christian here tonight, you're the one in the ark. You're the one in the cross. You're the one that knows. So go and warn them. Go and prepare them. And remind them of the gospel of Jesus Christ.